Welcome to Just Between Us, a podcast powered by the Corey Johnson Program for Post-Traumatic Healing in Boston.
Every week, we're going to focus on ways to heal from the devastating impact of collective trauma on our world.
My name is Reverend Liz Walker.
My name is Jadel Cummins. Today, our guest is Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins. So let's get started.
Steve, we are just so excited to have you here. I call you Steve because I've known you back before Sheriff.
Forever.
You know, we're trying to talk public issues in personal ways. And so the issue of trauma is certainly one of those. We all go through that personally, but we go through it as a nation. But our topic today is forgiveness, not something we necessarily think of when we think of our correction systems. So, Steve, does forgiveness play a role at all in your Suffolk County Sheriff's Department when you're talking about men and incarcerated?
People have said to me that the criminal justice system is broken. And I counter with the fact that it's not broken. It was built this way. Mm. It was built to be punitive. It was built to hold people down and beat people down. What we're doing now is the pendulum is swinging more towards a rehabilitative state, frankly, because there's no upside to incarcerating as many people as we do in this country, and there's really no upside to incarcerating as many folk of color that we incarcerate. Now, interestingly, after Reconstruction and slavery went away, oops, they had to have something to replace that, and prisons served that.
Right.
That capacity. And I believe beginning back with Richard Nixon and then going forward, the number of people, particularly people of color, that went to jail exploded, you see. And so we can no longer do that for two reasons. One, because we are really compromising intellectual prowess. There are so many people that are very smart, very talented, that are incarcerated. Shouldn't happen that way. Two, we are destroying communities. We're destroying individuals, families, and communities. So we can no longer do it that way. And then there's the cost. And in my facility, it costs anywhere between $55,000 and $65,000 annually to incarcerate one person, and I have over 1,000 people every day, you see? And so we are beginning to look at how we do this. If you do something that's offensive to society, how do you pay that debt without having communities and families torn asunder and without having taxpayers pay a boatload of money? And so we put a number of programs in place to address that. How do we help people improve their station in life?
I just wanted to follow up. So yours, it sounds like a voice for reform, for criminal justice reform, in a world that doesn't seem to be responding to that. Am I wrong? Is everybody, is yours a lone voice, Sheriff, or do you think there are other people who
are trying to change it? Mine isn't a lone voice. Now, within law enforcement at the level that I'm at Sheriff, it's going to take a little bit more to move forward. But if you look at the DAs, district attorneys across the country, there are a lot of what they call progressive DAs now, Rachel Rollins being one in particular, our DA here in Suffolk County. And they're really looking at who should be in jail, why should they be in jail, and how long should they be in jail. And so that movement is really happening in earnest now so that we can change that dynamic.
You've been really talking about the goal is not to remain as we were, but to change and evolve and be better. So there's a lot of talk about criminal justice reform in all of our prison systems, and Reverend Liz hinted to that just now. How do you look at that topic in general, just the criminal justice system and the reform of it all?
Well, reformation is interesting because I do believe that it needs to start at the front door. And what do I mean by that? I think that we really have to look at our kids and how many kids we're putting in jail and why we're putting them in jail. And the juvenile system is almost a feeder to the adult system, okay? So you have to look at that. We have to start there. We have to really look at how do we interrupt the cycle of criminality. You see, the recidivism rate in the Commonwealth is 46%. So we know this Friday, half of the people that leave our facility this Friday will be back within 3 to 6 months. This is not a guess. This is empirical data out there that speaks to that. So how do you interrupt that? You know, so when you talk about reforming, we need to tear this whole thing apart and rebuild it. You know, not reform it. We need to rebuild it because it's so far off the tracks, you know, and just so unfair to so many people. A lot of people of color, but also a lot of white people. There are a lot of white people in jail too. So it's that group of people that I call the unseen, the overlooked, the unheard, you know. So they don't have advocates. You know, they don't have lobbyists to champion their cause, you see? And so until we really recognize that we need to do away with the bail system, until we recognize that we can't put people in jail, we shouldn't put people in jail for 40, 50, 60 years for life, you know. I know you have another question, but let me just say this to you. So we went over to Germany a couple of years ago to look at how they do their system. And we went to a court session where an 18-year-old unfortunately killed his grandmother. Mm. And his sentence came down and it was only 7 years. And we're like, 7 years for killing, you know, grandma, 7 years? And what we were told is, this guy is 18 years old. What good is it going to do to put him in jail for 50, 55, 60 years? If you look at the maturation of the brain, your brain's not fully developed until you're about 25 or 26. So what he did at 18, he probably wouldn't do at 25. And so what they're looking at is a way to work with individuals, right, and give them that second chance. Now, America likes to say we're a nation of second chances. That's bull. That's nonsense. We are not a nation of second chances. We are a punitive nation, a nation. And so reform is a nice concept, but we need to take this thing apart and rebuild it with an eye towards equity and fairness.
Mm. Is that system in Germany working? I mean, is that working in Germany? Send them for a shorter sentence and they come out and they don't have recidivism like we do?
Oh, but listen, it even gets even better, okay? In a lot of countries in Europe, when you come out of jail, you have healthcare, you have housing, and in a lot of cases, you have a job. Uh-huh. So what they're doing in their system is they're preparing you for the kind of the after incarceration life so that you do have an opportunity to really improve your station in life. We don't do that here, you know, to give people housing when they get out. I mean, that's unheard of in this country. A job, healthcare, that's unheard of. And so, yes, it works there.
You mentioned earlier about money, right? So it costs more money to hold someone in jail versus, you know, and we don't spend as much money in the education system just for one child. But how much of it is money driven?
Yeah, now, I mean, you look at the so-called private prisons and the like. I will say one thing about the Biden administration. They are doing away with that. They're like, you know, we're no longer going to cater to private facilities. And unfortunately, there are some judges, and I'm not just speaking off, you know, the top of my head. If you research it, you'll see there have been judges that have been getting kickbacks and getting paid to send people to jail, because then those facilities are then taking care of the judges monetarily or however they take care of them. And so the money aspect of it, and I want to reference the point that you just made. So if it costs $55,000 to $65,000 to incarcerate, but it costs, you know, somewhere between $15,000 and $18,000 to educate, you would think that this country would want to get in front of the curve and educate versus incarcerate. Mm-hmm. But I guess there's more money in incarceration than education.
Mm-hmm. That's a sad statement, but that's the reality in our culture. Let's get personal, because this is about taking public issues and making them personal. You have your own story about forgiveness and why it's so important to you, which I had never heard, but I know you speak about publicly. Could you tell us?
Yeah. So back in the day, which seems like 100 years ago, but it wasn't really that long.
No, I know.
My mom and dad got married when they were 18 and 19. I was born a couple of years later. Whereupon dad in his early 20s was like, this is too confining, I'm out of here. So he leaves. Now, back in the day, people didn't really talk about depression the way they talk about it now. And so my mother fell into what we would commonly know as a state of depression and began to self-medicate herself with alcohol. And so I refer to her as a functioning alcoholic, because she would go to work every day but come home and make sure that, at this point, my sister hadn't been born yet, that her child at the time, and then when my sister came along, her children, you know, were fed, were clean, did their homework. And after all of that, she would then drink herself to sleep every night, right? And I didn't really like have any real anger towards her. I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't define it. But I wasn't happy about the situation. But this is mom. I mean, this is my oldest friend, you know. And so you had to kind of forgive that. But the situation was it was worse with my dad, because my dad and my mom, unbeknownst to me, still were having relations. And I was 12 years old. I come home one day and my mother tells me that she's pregnant. She's going to have a baby, right? And I say, she had this boyfriend, Johnny. How come everybody's named Johnny, right? Johnny, right? And And Johnny was a nice guy, but to me, Johnny wasn't daddy material.
Right.
You know? And I said, so you're going to have a baby with Johnny? And she said, no. The only person I'd have a child with is your father. Time out. My father who is married to somebody else, right. That father, right. That guy. And so my mother gives birth to my sister. My dad played the daddy role, actually, for a couple of years. I mean, so much so that his mother, my grandmother, used to babysit my sister. But then, one day, my stepmother finds out that my dad had a child outside of their marriage. And, oh, by the way, with his ex-wife.
Complicated.
And things got, very complicated. And dad pulled back. You know, sometimes when people are pushed into a corner, they react in a way that they might not have if they processed it a little bit longer, a little bit better. And so I thought to myself, well, I could continue to carry this negative energy against this guy, or I could let it go. So this morning before I came here, we have a program called Nurturing Fathers at the Sheriff's Department. And today they're having their graduation from this particular program. And I recounted this story to them. But I also said to them that, guys, you can't make these babies and then not live up to your responsibilities. You see, you got to do better for your family.
Absolutely.
You know? If you don't want to have kids, then do the proper thing and don't make the kids. But if you make them, own up to it. You know, and so you want to talk, this is nurturing fathers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unfortunately, you are in jail getting this lesson. But let this be a life lesson, you know, and do the right thing by your kids. And oh, by the way, while you're doing that, don't do silly things that will get you reincarcerated.
Right, right. Well, so you are speaking then from your own experiences in some ways by handing them that. I didn't mean to cut you off, Judell.
Oh, no. What I've learned, right, from my experience is that when I don't forgive, it cripples my ability to act in love. So for both of you, what makes you want to forgive?
I think the sheriff just said it really clearly,
right.
To let it go.
Right.
We always think, and I'll put my preacher hat on, that forgiveness is something you do for the other person, but forgiveness frees you up. There's a story about an ancient civilization where when you did something wrong, you had to carry, if you murdered someone, you had to carry his body or her body on your back. And until that rotted away, so that guilt, you know, so you were there, you had it, right? You had that crime on your back. Guilt is like that, you know, that idea that you carry this around with you. And when you let it go, and not just guilt, but that accusation against that other person, you're carrying that. So when you let it go, you free yourself. Don't you agree, Steve,
a little bit? I agree 100%, but I will also say this in answer to your question. When other people see that you have the capacity to forgive,
wow,
that speaks to them also, you see. And I think that's important, particularly in positions like the one I hold, the one that the pastor holds. When people look to us, we have to walk the talk. I forget what that saying is, but we have to show that we have the ability to be leaders. If we are anointed with that title of being a leader, then you have to be a leader. And I think the Reverend will agree with me that you need to do that in a productive way. So if people see that you have the capacity to forgive, then hopefully that will transfer over to them and they will also do the same thing.
And forgiveness is not forgetting.
Right.
Now, you know, the Bible says God forgives and forgets, but we don't forget.
Mm-hmm.
But forgiving is letting go, you know, so it doesn't mean you have to forget. But what a conversation. This is great.
Right.
I'm loving this. Sheriff Steve Tompkins, thank you so much for stopping by. And Judell, you're just growing right in front of me.
With your help.
Your questions and with your contribution. And that is it for this week's Just Between Us. We hope you'll continue to join us in these conversations and in our weekly Zoom conversations called Can We Talk, where people from all walks of life share their stories of loss, grief, hope, and healing. And if you want to learn more about Can We Talk and the Corey Johnson Program, visit our website at rpcsocialimpactctr.org. I'm going to give you that again, rpcsocialimpactctr.org. Thanks for joining us, everybody, and be well.